Meet Sasha. The character is fictional. The experience is shared by people across London today. This is their story. In education, across a constituency sitting near the bottom of England's deprivation index, qualified graduates stand ready to teach in schools crying out for maths teachers, while the institutions that could train them cite budget cuts and spending limits. Sasha's voice reveals how those limits work in practice and what they really mean.
I grew up in a council flat in Clapton, watching my mum leave for her night shifts cleaning offices. She'd always check my homework before she went, even when she was exhausted. Mathematics was my escape and my anchor. Numbers made sense when nothing else did. By the time I finished my first class degree in pure mathematics at Queen Mary University of London, I knew I wanted to give back to the community that raised me. I spent 2 years at a fintech startup in Canary Wharf, building algorithms for people who already had more money than they knew what to do with. The pay was good, but I felt disconnected. Every morning I'd take the overground from Hackney Central, watching teenagers heading to school, wondering if any of them loved maths the way I did. I wanted to be the teacher who showed them that numbers could be beautiful, not just useful. In March 2023, I applied to the School Direct Teacher Training Program at Hackney Community College. The admissions tutor, Sarah Mitchell, was genuinely excited when we met. "We desperately need maths teachers," she said, "especially ones who understand this community. You're exactly what these schools are looking for." I left that meeting buzzing with possibility. Finally, I'd found a way to use my skills where they were actually needed. When I called in June to confirm my place, Sarah's tone had completely changed. "I'm so sorry, Sasha," she said. "The bursary for maths teacher training has been cut from £28,000 to £15,000. We can't afford to run the program." I was stunned. How could they cancel training for teachers they'd just told me were desperately needed? Sarah sounded as frustrated as I felt. "The numbers don't make sense to me either," she admitted. "But those are the budget allocations we've been given." I thought maybe a different route would work. At the University College London Institute of Education, Dr. James Peterson was sympathetic but firm. "Treasury spending limits mean we had to reduce our intake by 60%, he explained. "There's simply no budget." The way he said it made it sound like a law of physics, not a choice. I asked him about the teacher shortage I kept reading about. "Oh, it's real," he said, "especially in maths, but our funding comes in fixed pots. We can't just decide to train more teachers because schools need them." Teach First seemed like my last hope. Maybe a different training model would have different funding streams. Regional coordinator Emma Walsh was apologetic but equally clear. "The Department for Education set our recruitment targets based on national averages," she told me. "They don't account for London's teacher shortage being twice the national rate. Our hands are tied." Every conversation ended the same way. People acknowledged the need, then shrugged at their inability to meet it. "There is no funding," they said. "The budget has been cut." At first, I accepted this. It sounded reasonable. Everyone accepted it. Governments have limited resources, after all. Departments have to prioritize. Tough choices have to be made. These were intelligent, well-meaning people telling me something that seemed like common sense. But in September, something changed my perspective entirely. Walking past the shuttered Hackney Teaching School Alliance building on Morning Lane, I noticed the windows weren't boarded up. I could see inside. The classrooms were still there, whiteboards clean, desks arranged, computer labs with equipment covered but clearly intact. This wasn't a building that had been sold or repurposed. It was just empty. That same week, I met my neighbor, David. He's a recent physics graduate who'd also been turned away from teacher training. "Funny thing," he said, "I counted 6 of us on our street alone who wanted to teach but couldn't get funded places. Meanwhile, those classrooms are just sitting there. 6 people, 1 street, all qualified graduates, all wanting to teach subjects that schools couldn't fill." I started walking around the area differently, paying attention. The building existed, the people existed, the schools that needed us existed, the students who would benefit existed. What exactly was it that there is no money for? Someone had made a decision that these resources should not be connected. someone with the power to create teacher training programs had chosen not to. The government that issues the pound had told me it could not find enough pounds to train the teachers who were standing right there, ready to work, but it was the same government that found billions for bank bailouts when the financial sector needed support, the same government that found money for corporate tax cuts. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the facilities were available. They were, all of them. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still ready to teach. But I understand now that what happened to me isn't happening because Britain ran out of money. It's happening because someone in Westminster decided that connecting willing teachers to schools that need them wasn't worth the political choice to make it happen. Every empty classroom, every graduate turned away, every school struggling to fill positions. They're not symptoms of scarcity. They're evidence of a system that treats government spending like a household budget when it's actually the tool that could bring all these pieces together. My story isn't unique to Hackney North and Stoke Newington. It's the story of every constituency where people in needs exist side by side while someone in Whitehall says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never empty. It was locked.
What Sasha experienced has a name, cherry picking. This is when institutions select the rare examples where government spending failed to justify never spending, while ignoring the overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest. It's like a tobacco company in the 1960s pointing to the one study that didn't find a link to cancer while dismissing the hundreds that did, or a pharmaceutical company highlighting every drug trial that showed side effects to argue that no medicines should ever be approved. In Sasha's story, this played out as a relentless focus on programs that didn't work perfectly, budgets that were wasted, or training schemes that didn't achieve 100% employment rates. These cherry-picked failures became the justification for cutting teacher training bursaries, reducing university intakes, and setting recruitment targets that ignored regional needs. Meanwhile, the overwhelming evidence that teacher training works, that bursaries attract qualified candidates, and that London schools desperately need more maths teachers was set aside. The austerity objection here was predictable. Look what happened to countries that overspent on public services. But countries that issue their own currency have never defaulted due to domestic spending. Greece used the euro, not its own currency, while Nordic countries with large public sectors have fewer debt crises, not more. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. And in Sasha's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed, the decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Hackney North and Stoke Newington ranked 67 out of 543 English constituencies on the deprivation index, placing it in the second most deprived decile. English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 1,279 registered charities, Charity Commission Register, England and Wales. Local organisations received £47.1 million in total grants, 360 giving grant nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.